This morning, I want us to think together about how our fears impact and even determine our faith. I'm not talking about fears in terms of serious phobias or anxieties that need special treatment, but rather what are those worrisome, often irrational and ill-informed concerns that make us so uncomfortable, that put us on the defensive to the point that they shape our beliefs and practices, so much that we construct our belief in a way to accommodate those fears. The writer of John's epistle, John's letter, said it clearly. Perfect love drives out or casts out fear. However, the inverse of that is true as well. Our fears will cast out love. And that's how we end up with these expressions of so-called Christianity that have missing the essential and defining element of love. Fear causes us to do things out of character with our best selves and out of character with Jesus, the one we claim to follow. My friend Bill Tillman is a Christian ethicist out in Texas, and something he wrote years ago has stuck with me as being particularly profound. Bill once wrote, "Tell me what you fear, and I will tell you something of what you believe." Tell me what you fear, and I will tell you something of what you believe. It's true, if one becomes fearful of a certain group of people based on race or nationality or religion or some other factor, then one's belief system, despite being contrary to the life and teachings of Jesus, allows for demonizing those people and for rationalizing hostilities toward them. But if we live fearing being in a hateful place, or we fear people being mistreated, or we fear our own sense of purpose in life not being fulfilled, then those fears can lead us to beliefs that are more healthy and wholesome and more like Jesus. Tell me what you fear, and I will tell you something of what you believe, because our fears often define our faith. At times, we see a stark contrast between so-called Christian priorities and actions and the life and teachings of Jesus, and we wonder how in the world did we get so far off track? And the answer is usually rooted in fear. We seek to rationalize our fear-driven beliefs and behaviors as being justified, being valid. Because not only does love cast out fear, but fear casts out love. The writer of 1 John, however, is not the first or only voice to warn Christian believers of the paralysis and captivity of fear. Now, I work with words, not numbers, but somebody else went through the Bible and counted the references to avoiding and rejecting fear, and they came up with 365 verses. Does that number ring a bell about anything? There is a biblical reference for every day of the year telling us to not let fear rule our lives. It must be important for every day. Jesus told his followers repeatedly to fear not. Why? Because in the same way that love casts out fears, our fears can cast out love. And our fears can define our beliefs and behaviors in ways that Jesus does not recognize. Now, we may be tempted to downplay this reality, saying, well, everybody's afraid of something, or this thing really does seem like a threat to me, or it's not a big deal. But it is a big deal because it defines our faith, but it also defines the gospel message that we convey out there. A message of fearfulness is not a message of love. In the Interpretation Bible Commentary on the Epistles of John, the New Testament scholar D. Moody Smith writes, when John wants to underscore a point, he sometimes envisions an antagonist who says the opposite or acts falsely, and then he brands the one who speaks or acts in this way a liar. Now, my mother spent a lot of time telling me and my brothers not to call each other liars, but apparently John's mother didn't teach him that. He writes in verse 20, suppose someone claims to love God but hates a brother or sister, then they are a liar. They don't love their brother or sister whom they have seen, so they can't love God whom they haven't seen. Dr. Smith calls this the gripping and graphic denial that Christians can love the invisible God if they do not love the highly visible brothers and sisters. Now, I've already done you a favor. I've looked through the Bible, and there are no loopholes around this. I have a high school classmate who is a proud, independent, fundamentalist Baptist preacher. And once he proclaimed on Facebook, I am not, nor have I ever, been interested in another person's heart. I'm interested in a person's doctrine. He could not be more wrong. While doctrine has its important place, what matters most is what's in our hearts. Jesus didn't come to change our minds. Jesus came to change our hearts. That's what conversion is all about. And whether we allow fear to cast out love or love to cast out fear will define our beliefs and our behavior. And we simply cannot love the invisible God and hate those persons we consider less deserving of God's love and grace. John, in this biblical text, does not treat love like we often do as some passing sentimental matter, but rather as the very essence of faithful living, even the defining nature of God. In verse 13, he writes, here's how we know that we are joined to God and God in us. Or as other translations put it, by this we know we abide in Him. John is clear, there is no separation between the presence of God in our lives and the presence of God in the love we have for others. In fact, John uses the word love as the defining, determining nature of God. In verse 16, he says simply and emphatically, God is love. And he is repeating that affirmation from verse 8 earlier than when we began reading. Many of our unhealthy fears are based on emotions or rational, more than our rational thinking. We get stirred up. There are those who want to divide us and want us to have hostile feelings toward other people, to fear those around us. Sometimes we need to turn off the television and radios because there are a lot of folks out there trying to tell us that we should fear one another. The Baptist Bible scholar Edward McDowell, in his commentary on this passage, writes, such love must be exercised by the will and the mind and cannot depend for expression upon emotion or feeling. Now, he wrote that a half century ago, but it's so relevant for us. We read or we hear something and it creates fear within us and we get defensive and then we demonize those people. We construct our beliefs to accommodate those kinds of fears, and the end result is that fear wins out over love. Now, our modern understanding of the English word perfect sometimes causes confusion with a biblical rendering of the word that's translated twice here in verse 18, which says, "There is no fear in love. Instead, perfect love casts out or drives out fear." The one who fears does not have perfect love. Scholars tell us that the Greek word translated as perfect here might be better understood as meaning completed or mature. Dr. McDowell notes that the person who is driven by fear rather than love does not attain maturity. He notes how these ancient holy writings align with what we have learned from modern psychology. We know that fear paralyzes and inhibits our human efforts. We know that fear separates individuals from one another and creates suspicion, and that fear encourages violence and emotional instability. And on the other hand, Dr. McDowell writes that love motivates individuals to respect and accept one another and creates an atmosphere of good in which they can live together. He summarizes it in this way: love matures individuals, fear impedes our growth toward maturity. Do you want to be a mature follower of Jesus? We're not going to be a perfect one in our understanding of the word, but we can be a more mature one. If we genuinely want to be faithful, mature followers of Jesus, we must allow love to cast out our fears rather than letting our fears suppress our love. I can't overstate how clear and profound are John's words in verse 17. He writes, "Love is fulfilled among us when in this world we are like Jesus." Love is fulfilled among us when in this world we are like Jesus. And Jesus was not driven by fear, but by love. The late John Claypool, through his lectures, sermons, and writings, shaped much of my personal theology. He was the first I heard to note that not only does love cast out fear, but fear can cast out love. In one of his books, he tells of traveling in London as a college student and entering a small rural inn, where upon the mantel were carved these words: "Fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. There was no one there." Now, I'm not sure where that quote originated, but it's been repeated many times. Fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. There was no one there. Of course, there are things that are worth fearing. However, if we allow our beliefs and therefore our behaviors to be shaped by whatever strikes us as fearful or threatening rather than by love, we cannot and will not be mature followers of Jesus. The writer of the Epistles of John long ago was absolutely right that mature love drives away fear, and that love is fulfilled among us in this world when we are like Jesus. What do you fear? And how are your fears shaping your beliefs and behavior? Now, be careful about thinking about that too hard and long, because it can change your heart and your mind and your life. And it can do a lot of good for the people who live around us. Which is more true for you and me? Is fear keeping us from being more loving, or is love rightfully keeping us from being more fearful? So often our fears are self-serving. We live in a sense of self-preservation. Oscar Wilde once wrote, "Selfishness is not living as one wishes to live. It's asking others to live as one wishes to live." Do we really accommodate certain fears, even try to validate them, because they make us feel more comfortable than loving in the ways that God loves? 5-year-old Billy was in the kitchen while his mother was cooking, and she asked him to go in the pantry and get a can of tomato soup. But he said it was dark in there and he was scared. She was busy at the stove and couldn't leave it at the moment. So she insisted, "Billy, please go to the pantry and get me a can of tomato soup." "But it's dark in there," he said, "and I'm afraid." She finally said to him, "Think of it this way, Billy. Jesus will be in the pantry with you." Reluctantly, Billy opened the pantry door, and indeed it was dark in there. He couldn't bear stepping in, so he put his mouth to the crack in the door and said, "Jesus, if you're in there, will you please hand me a can of tomato soup?" Now that is an expected response of immaturity. It makes sense to a 5-year-old. It doesn't make sense for us. It takes courage to face our fears, but it also takes love. For fear flourishes in self-interest, yet love shifts our fear of change and fear of others for concern for the well-being of all of us as a whole. No, this is not some passing or peripheral matter for people who take seriously the call to follow Jesus. So let us intentionally allow the love of God to consistently cast out the fear, the fears that keep us from being faithful. You know, there's an easy test to determine how we're doing. It's in that wonderful summarizing statement of John. "Love is fulfilled among us when in this world we are like Jesus." That's the test. Well, are we up to it? I pray that we are. Come now to our time of commitment, and whether in the privacy of your own pew or before this congregation, we affirm and reaffirm our faith. We invite you to be a part of this congregation, to say yes to Jesus for the first time, or to reconfirm that commitment, that we will not be driven by fear, but we will be driven by love, because it is in Jesus that we have found our source of salvation and our model for living, the one who loves us most and loved us first. May we respond to the love of God shown to us in Jesus Christ as we stand and sing together.